Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to the show. This is Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg. Here with me, as always, it's David Ramil, and we have a special guest with us today, Jack Alfonso. You might know him better as Alfonso Hoops or whatever his random nickname of that day is on Twitter. Welcome, Jack. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
So we are, Jack's joining us for our Monday mailbag. And I know what you're thinking. It's not Monday. Wes, you're an idiot. So this is Tuesday transmissions. We had the recap of the Celtics game go up Monday. So we held the Monday mailbag off for a day. So let's just get right into it. Our first question is, why don't the Heat seem to ever run pick and rolls with Hassan Whiteside anymore? This must be a listener of our show, because this is something we've been complaining about for a while. David, do you want to start?
Well, I think it just starts off with Whiteside screening, obviously. I mean, I think, you know, he slips the screen much too quickly, and the defender usually has time to come over it or go through it. And, you know, he usually cuts the hoop a split second too soon there. So it just doesn't work with him setting the screen. You know, obviously, we've seen the screen work better with other players. We've seen more effective screening from Dragic and Tyler Johnson to free up James Johnson when he's at center and the ball handler. So I think the problem is Whiteside himself.
Jack, do you have a take on this?
I basically agree with that. I think that's one of the more frustrating parts of Whiteside's game, honestly. Like, we've seen that he's able, when he wants to set good screens. We saw that kind of towards the end of last year a little bit. But he's really regressed there and kind of went back to what he was, and it's just not working out.
I wonder how much the coaching has to do with it, and how much the scheme has to do with it, because there is a form of screening where you slip the screen and you just kind of nudge the defender and you just get to the rim as fast as possible. But he's not even doing that. Like, to call somebody, like, replied to me, like, on Twitter the other day and was like, yeah, he seems to slip the screens all the time. And I was like, slipping is a generous term, because he's not even trying at this point. So he's not even making contact, and he's got such a big body. I don't know what the deal is. And I looked up some numbers here. And just schematically, I think that the Heat aren't going to him as the role man as often. Well, they're not. That's what the numbers say. So the Heat are utilizing the role man in a pick and roll, meaning that the role man gets the ball in a pick and roll in 6.6% of their possessions. Last year was 7.6%, so it's a full percentage point down. Meanwhile, the pick and roll ball handler is being used in the possessions at 17%. That's the same clip as last season. So that hasn't changed. So it's really the role man's role in the pick and roll that's changed from last year to this year. And those are just some of the numbers that I dug up, and I don't want to get too into the weeds with them. But it's clear right now that the Heat are just not using Whiteside. Either they're not using Whiteside as a role man as much, or they're not able to get it to him as much. I think it's a little bit of a mix of both.
And you know, we've talked about it before, but obviously he had a much better connection and rapport with Dwayne Wade when they were running pick and rolls last season. But, you know, I'm not sure how much of that is the fact that either Wade's timing was better or different than Dragic's or any other ball handler, or how much of that is just that Whiteside was, as you said, Jack, screening better last season, or seemed to be screening better last season. I mean, it seems like that's a weird combination possibly of both factors there.
Yeah, there is something to be said about his effort and engagement when he's not setting those screens, because he definitely has the body for it. And I do think part of it could be schematically, like a schematical thing, where I think I personally don't like how many post-ups they try to work him into, because I don't think as much. I like his face-up game way more than his post-up game.
Oh, yeah.
I think engaged in setting picks, like hard picks and rolling to the basket, I think that's not unstoppable, but that's definitely something that you can build your offense around if he's engaged in setting hard screens.
I'm glad you bring up the post-ups, because I was looking up that those numbers too. 30.4% of Miami's of Whiteside's possessions are in post-ups. So more than a quarter of his possessions end up in post-ups. That's 10th in the NBA in post-ups. He's posting up that much in the NBA. That's like Al Jefferson, LaMarcus Aldridge, Zebo, like those kind of numbers, right?
Yeah.
Marcus Gasol, you know, Memphis is running everything around through Marcus Gasol in the post right now.
Did you compare that to last season by any chance? I was wondering whether that was different last year or not.
It's insanely higher. Like,
yeah.
I don't have that number written down, but I remember it's insanely higher. And of the top, so Whiteside's the 10th, has the 10th most post-ups percentage-wise in the NBA this season. Of those guys in the top 10, he is the only player that has a field goal percentage below 40% in post-up situations.
Wow.
That gives Andre Drummond and Joseph Nurkic, they are better post-up guys on a per-possession basis than Hassan Whiteside.
It's that damn hook shot.
I'm glad you bring the hook shot up, because that's another thing I found. NBA.com has Whiteside's attempted hook shots at 105. He's taken 105 hook shots this year. Guess how many?
I was gonna say, I'm gonna guess in the
30s and 40s.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say somewhere around there, probably
48.
Well, that's higher than I thought, to be honest with you. Yeah,
that's still really bad. He's got that little. He doesn't even get close to the basket. He gets those 7 or 8 foot push hooks that I call them. Yeah. He's got, comparatively, he's dunked the ball 63 times, 23 alley-oops, just 21 tip-ins, and 95 layups. So he's taken more hook shots than layups. He's taken almost twice as many hook shots than dunks. He's not even alley-ooping and getting tip-ins anymore. It's insane.
So he's not catching the lob then, I guess.
That's exactly what those numbers say. He's not just catching lobs. So, yeah, I do wonder how much of it is schematic, and I go back to that quote with Whiteside about after the Cleveland game, Eric Spoelstra saying this guy needs to dominate on both ends of the court, and Whiteside got taken out, and he's like, I don't know what else there is to do. I'm getting as many hook shots as I possibly can. And I just felt like screaming at my computer screen when I read that quote, like, that's not a good thing. You want less hook shots. But I do wonder what this coaching staff is telling him. If they want him to develop that hook shot, they're like, well, this season's in the garbage anyway, we're not making the playoffs, develop a hook shot all season. I don't know if that's the thing here, but we've seen Eric Spoelstra get guys like LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade to do things that they don't want to do. Why is Whiteside doing these things? That's my question.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I'm wondering, you know, he doesn't seem to fight for position particularly well either. You know, to Jack's point, he obviously has the size and you'd think he has the strength for it, but he just kind of seems to give up. If you, as a defender, kind of nudge him a little bit and keep him out of the paint, he kind of gives up on it, really. He doesn't really try and assert himself too much in the block, and he doesn't really fight for position. He does occasionally, but not nearly enough, and that's how he winds up getting those hook shots that are much further away from the rim than they have to. It just, like, we don't want to spend, as we have in the past, too much time beating the guy up. And to the original question, I guess there's no real answer as to why they don't run those pick and rolls with Whiteside anymore. But it's just, there's just a lot of different things going on there, and he doesn't seem to be developing any particularly well.
All right, so we don't want to beat up Whiteside, but this next question is going to be us beating up Whiteside. So this is our next mailbag question. With the way Hassan Whiteside is playing and his immaturity showing on the court, should the Miami Heat trade him for anything that they can possibly get in return? That was a question in our mailbag this week.
The immaturity off the court, I think, and off, I guess it was.
Yeah,
I guess it relays back to his comments about DeAndre Jordan, which, you know, I'll admit we may have overblown a little bit, although we were at the time particularly upset about him. We weren't overblowing them.
No, because everybody was killing us afterwards, and you know what? I don't really care. You know, I could deal with some bad comments. But, and I don't know if, Jack, you have any opinion on this, but I thought that he came back and basically apologized and said that his comments were misconstrued, and everybody was blowing me up in my Twitter feed. I don't know about yours, David, but everybody was like, I can't believe you published that story even after Ira Winderman reported that the quotes were misconstrued. And my argument was, Ira Winderman didn't report that the quotes were misconstrued. Winderman reported that Whiteside said they were misconstrued. I still believe in Whiteside's first batch of comments. Afterward, it's really easy to come off of them and apologize.
Now, you know, we've been there. We've interviewed guys before. It's easy to say that maybe the comments may have been taken out of context, and we don't know if there was a follow-up statement or anything like that. I think originally came from Tom DeAngelo, if I'm not mistaken, right? He's the one who first reported those comments. So I don't think a guy like DeAngelo is likely to just take those out of context. And I know he was on a recent Heat Beat podcast, and I don't know if he talked about what what Whiteside said or not, or whether or not it was out of context, or whether or not it may have been misconstrued. But either way, I think they were legitimately printed and reported. So I don't know. The immaturity thing, you know, I'm curious to hear your take, Jack, because I think you are Heat Twitter's foremost provocateur. Whether you'll be the devil's advocate whenever it's necessary. So I'm curious your take on whether or not he is showing any kind of immaturity off the court, or whether or not, as you pointed out, maybe that's feeding old narratives about his personality disorder.
Well, I definitely think there's something to be said about, like, the comments and them portraying a sort of immaturity that he has. I definitely don't think he's the most mature person in the world.
Okay.
Questions of intent are definitely, just subject to interpretation. I think we all filter it through whatever our perception of Whiteside is. And if you think Whiteside's immature, you're going to think those comments are immature. And if you think he's the greatest player of all time or something, you're going to think those comments were whatever you want to think. I think a lot of how we treat Whiteside and what he says is just filtered through whatever our interpretation of him is. I think he's definitely a player who's different than a lot of the guys we've seen in big roles like that, where you're speaking a lot, like a Wade or something, who's a lot more poised with the media. Mm-hmm. He gives you a lot more quotes that are a little bit questionable, so you can read into them a little bit. And I'm not defending what he said about DeAndre. I think Whiteside could definitely benefit from playing more like DeAndre, but
yeah,
it's definitely left to whatever you want to interpret it as. It's very ambiguous.
Go ahead.
The point I was making with Whiteside is, you know, he was talking about DeAndre Jordan and that, you know, all he does is catch lobs. And I don't, whether or not that was malicious or not, right? Like, whether or not he was putting down DeAndre, the point that he was trying to make, and this was even in his quote-unquote apology, you know, your quote
explanation.
Yeah, afterwards was that, like, I catch lobs, I also post up, I also take hook shots, I also do all this. And the point, and when I wrote about this in my column about it, was, like, that's like me saying I play piano. I could sit down behind a piano and tap a bunch of keys, but it doesn't mean I'm any good at it. And just because Whiteside is one of the worst post-up players by efficiency in the NBA, doesn't mean that he's a good post-up player. Just because you do it doesn't mean you should or you're any good at it. And that was my argument, was that I think he views himself in this light, that a hook shot is a good shot, or that, you know, some of these 18-foot jumpers that he has no business taking are good shots. And it's like, no, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Well, that's also a question of whether you think he was saying that he's a better player than DeAndre, or you're saying that he has a much bigger burden. Because he definitely does have to carry more of the offensive load.
That's true.
For Miami Heat to be successful. So that part of it, like, if you interpret it as Hassan saying that, that's definitely completely valid. He does have to be a successful post-up player if they want to win. He's not, and that's why they're not winning, but that's definitely, he definitely has that burden more than DeAndre does.
Let's answer this question. So should the Heat trade him for anything that they could possibly get in return? I want to reformat that question, because if somebody just said, we will give you nothing, or it will give you a protected second-round pick, obviously the Heat don't do it. So I do want to say, should the Heat put him on the trade market and start fielding phone calls? That's how I'm going to reword the question.
I think they should for every player on the team, probably. I think they should look to move whoever, especially Dragic and Whiteside, who are kind of up there in terms of age compared to, like, Winslow and Richardson and stuff. If you want a young core, you're going to have to move some of your older guys who take up more of the salary.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we've talked about, you know, trade scenarios in the past, and I think we've broken down a few possible alternatives. I mean, I think they should definitely start shopping him around, not necessarily actively shopping, but taking calls and engaging interests and seeing what they might be able to determine or what they might be able to package as far as, you know, something to get in return for Whiteside. It's certainly an open topic of conversation. I think we've all come to the agreement that I don't think that Whiteside is the kind of player, just because by virtue of his skill set, not necessarily his personality or anything else, the extraneous noise, but just because of what he can do, he's not necessarily the kind of player that you can build around. He's much more of a complementary piece, which is fine. He's probably a team's second, maybe third best option, probably realistically third best option for a legitimate contender. And this team is far from that, and that's why he's being asked to do as much as he is. But at the same time, if you can trade somebody like Whiteside, who could be a better piece in another team, say Portland or anybody else, and get something substantial back in return that you could kind of, you know, fill more of the gaps that you have in this roster, I'd certainly consider it. And I think the Heat front office will as well.
Where I stand on this is either you get a true alpha dog to get to put on the Heat, and that way you can have Whiteside as your second or third option. Very much how the Clippers have Chris Paul, and they're able to kind of limit what DeAndre Jordan does to specifically what he does well. If they can find a true alpha dog, like if they can somehow get John Wall off the Wizards, then maybe all of a sudden a John Wall Whiteside type of thing works. And if you have a real alpha dog who can lead the offense, then all of a sudden you can limit Whiteside's role and scope, and he becomes a more efficient player. That, I think, would work. I don't know if that's going to happen. And obviously, Pat Riley's been trying to do that. He tried to do that with Kevin Durant most recently. It didn't work. And I look at a team like Boston, who was able to... I don't think we talk about how they were able to get Al Horford in free agency. That was a crazy move. Al Horford could have went to OKC, where there was a real star there. He could have went to Washington, where there's a real star there. He chose to go to Boston, where there's not a real star, because what attracted him was A, the coach, B, the system, and C, all the young players and assets that that team has. And I don't know if we've really seen something like, and of course the tradition of the team, right? I guess that has to come into play, but I don't think we talked enough about how that was able to lure an all-star player. And I wonder if the Heat would be better off going that way, because I don't know what all-star player is looking at Hassan Whiteside and saying, I want to play with that guy, as opposed to all the other options that that all-star player probably will have. So if you trade Whiteside and while we're at it, Goran Dragic, and you get a bunch of first-round picks and young players and assets and stuff, and all of a sudden you're playing this pace-and-space scheme that we know Spoelstra prefers to play, then maybe that's more attractive to a free agent than playing with Hassan Whiteside. So
I've got 2 points. One, you know, more a statement, and that's that, you know, the question regards his immaturity off the court. And I must say, despite whatever negative things we've said about him or alleged or whatever about Whiteside, the reality is he hasn't done anything off the court other than the occasional statement looking stupid or being somewhat, you know, inflammatory. Other than talking to giraffes and being a master of Snapchat, he hasn't really done anything to say put him in the same level as like a DeMarcus Cousins or anybody like that. So, I mean, he hasn't been problematic necessarily off the court. Questionable, yeah, entertaining, certainly, but not necessarily immature. I mean, and then the other question is, you brought up the if you're going to trade Whiteside, you have to trade Dragic. Do you see the two moves being linked, like inherently, or can you still trade off Whiteside and still continue to build a team even with Dragic at his advanced age, let's say?
I think you could keep Dragic hypothetically and trade Whiteside. I think there is definitely helpful to keep Dragic on the roster while you don't really have a good backup point guard to really initiate the offense in. Then you're just kind of putting it in Justice's hands, and you don't really know if he's ready for that. So I think for like the development of the younger players going forward, it could definitely be helpful to keep Dragic on the roster and kind of maintain some sort of stability, so you're not just the Sixers or something.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that the more likely scenario is that they trade Dragic, because I think he just has more trade value right now than Whiteside, given that you could kind of plug him in. And there might just be – he might be easier to get than Whiteside. The Heat might not be asking for as much in return. But, like, if the Heat did trade Whiteside before Dragic, I think you could keep Dragic on the roster for all those reasons Jack just pointed out, but it would also mark that eventually Dragic would be gone, probably in like a draft night trade or something, after the Heat have an opportunity to find his replacement via free agency or the draft or whatever it might be. But all right, we spent a lot of time on those two Hassan Whiteside questions, so we've got three more questions if we can get to them. I want to kind of move a little bit faster through them. So here's the next one. When it comes to Derek Williams, I feel it's as simple as playing him more and he'll get going. Seems like sporadic playing time is what's causing his struggles. At this point, should the Heat just let him play? Whoever wants to go first.
No. I know you want to go quicker, so that's my answer.
There we go. I love it. Good pace.
I mean, look, I wrote about him. I talked to him. You know, he was really cool and open about how difficult it's been to find stability, and he's been really in very bad dysfunctional situations throughout his short career. It's only been five seasons, and he just hasn't been able to catch a break. Sacramento, Minnesota, New York, all teams in various states of dysfunction. So it's really a bad, it's been a bad place for him throughout this, his short tenure, but you know, this isn't any better. And we saw that, you know, Spoelstra was willing to go to him at some point during the season, start him for a number of games, and he just really couldn't make the most of that opportunity. I don't know if the solution is to just play him for another 50-some-odd games and hope that he just continues to catch fire. I know that you and I have both talked about the possibility of a Williams outbreak game where he'll score 17, 19, 20 points or so, and maybe he could find a little bit more stability. But he's just not able to put it together. He didn't have any answers when I talked to him, and I just don't think he's going to find them by getting more playing time. So I don't think that's the solution. Jack?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with everything. I do think there is some validity to questioning like the sporadic rotations and just the constant injuries and everything kind of affecting the way some people play. I think that applies more to guys like Josh Richardson or some other people who kind of are hurt by the injuries and lack of continuity. But I like Derek Williams as a person, as far as I know. He seems like a cool guy, but I really don't think he's a guy that you keep on the team long term, and I don't think more playing time is going to change that.
I kind of want to just reference a mistake that I think a lot of people make when they're evaluating players or more specifically looking at box scores. And it's this idea that they look at it and they're like, hey, every time this guy gets playing time, he tends to perform. And that is that's very much a chicken and the egg type argument. Is he getting better stats because he's being allowed to explore his game in greater minutes? Or is he getting greater minutes because he happens to be shooting well that night, for example? Or he's playing well that night, so he's getting more minutes? I think with Derek Williams, it's the latter. When he's playing well, he'll get minutes. And I think we've seen that so far this year. But he's got a really short rope. And while that makes him uncomfortable, I'm sure, and it probably makes him play a little bit tight, he hasn't really done anything in his entire career, to be honest, where it says, like, you know, he shouldn't have a tight rope, you know, or a tight leash, so to speak. So I just wanted to kind of point that out, that when we're looking at box scores, don't just look, oh, this guy gets played 22 minutes and he scored 14 points. He should be playing 22 minutes every night. That's not really how that goes.
I will add that I think a lot of that might have to do with Spoelstra and the coaching staff. I don't know for certain whether or not they're communicating regularly to him, but I know that, like you said, he's in a tough spot as far as, you know, being able to determine when he's going to get playing time or how nervous or jittery that might make him on a night-to-night basis. And that's a tough place to be in, and especially for a guy who's looking to prove himself and hasn't had the opportunity throughout his career. So that has to fall on Spoelstra to do a better job and say, look, I don't know if I'm going to you, but when I call on you, don't worry about it. You'll stay for as long as I need you to be in there. Don't worry about production. I need you not to fuck anything up. And that might not have, that might necessarily have come from Spoelstra. You know, he might not be hearing that, and that might need the kind, that might be the kind of comfort he'd need in order to go out there and feel a little bit more comfortable and say, okay, I can go. I'll miss a couple shots, but I know I'm not going to get the leash pulled right away, and I can still continue to play my game. So he hasn't done anything necessarily to ruin things, but he might be, like you alleged, you know, he might be playing a little bit scared and jittery. So that's something that I think falls on the coaching staff.
All right. So speaking of playing time, Luke Babbitt continues to get major playing time when he's healthy. This is our next question. Can the Heat give his minutes to someone else who might actually help the team? Harsh. They give him to Derek Williams. I don't know. I don't know why Luke Babbitt gets as many minutes. Eric Spoelstra does seem to have some sort of idealistic infatuation with the idea of Luke Babbitt spacing the floor. I will say, since Wayne Ellington has returned from injury, and when Ellington's been healthy, we've seen Babbitt's minutes go down. So it might be Eric Spoelstra just looking for some sort of floor spacing, some three-point shooting.
I mean, that's it, right? It's just the fact that the team needs three-point shooting. It's not getting it from much anybody else, and he does provide that. And you know, you and I have talked about it, Wes. You know, the kid can shoot in non-game situations.
Because I tweeted this the other night, and the only evidence that I have that Luke Babbitt is a good three-point shooter, because I didn't watch any Luke Babbitt before he was in Miami. Full disclosure. Right. I knew he had long hair, and he played for the Pelicans, and that was weird. And the only evidence that I have that Luke Babbitt is a good three-point shooter is basketballreference.com. That is literally the only evidence I have. But
I've had a chance to see him practice twice.
Okay.
It's not much of a sample size.
So wide
it's
open.
Unbelievable. The kid has such a ridiculous
Didn't Chris strength. Anderson like routinely make corner threes during practice, though?
No, that's Fiorentino saying that. You know, he takes them and makes them for the game, Eric. That's ridiculous. That Fiorentino was the only guy who thought Chris Anderson, other than Chris Anderson, thought that he had a three-point shot. But that's about
Chris
it.
Chris Anderson had a three-point shot.
Oh, did you really? Yeah. Do you think Udonis Haslem has a three-point shot as well?
No, I didn't say that. I just think Chris Anderson is a stretch five that never got the chance.
Wow. That's an interesting take. I've never heard that before.
I'm kidding. For Jack, a guy who's do you have an opinion on Luke Babbitt?
I don't really know what to say about this because the power forward rotation is just awful. Who's your best power forward? It's Justice Winslow, who's your best small forward.
Yeah.
Nick Roberts, who's getting healthier, and that's encouraging. But other than that, Babbitt's kind of the only guy you got. So,
Johnson, depending on what position you define him as.
Yeah, he's been in and out too, though. Like, there's been no continuity with all of the injuries and stuff.
Right. So, yeah, I think a lot of it is dependent on who is healthy that night. And like I said, when Wayne Ellington seems to be healthy, we see a little bit less of Luke Babbitt. Eric Spoelstra knows that he doesn't have – and you know what? That's the other thing I kind of want to point out too, is people kind of complaining about Luke Babbitt getting all these minutes or Dion Waiters when he was healthy getting all those minutes. And, you know, who else is on this roster that you want to give these minutes to? And that's kind of what this question is. Is like, there's Luke Babbitt there, and if he's really him and Josh Richardson, and Luke Babbitt, most of his minutes were coming when Richardson and Ellington were both injured. So somebody's got to be a three-point shooter, and Luke Babbitt is like the closest thing that he'd have to it. If Spoelstra had better options, I bet he'd probably go to those other options. If Shane Battier was sitting on the bench, he'd go to Shane Battier. So, all right, this is our final question. Who do you think that he could trade for to the set? Sorry, let me try this again. Who do you think the Heat can trade to the 76ers for Nerlens Noel? Maybe Luke Babbitt and Derek Williams?
No, that'll work. I think
that'll work. 76ers.
Well, Derek Williams is a Philadelphia guy, right? So, oh, no, he's from California. He just likes the Eagles for some reason. Dion's a Philadelphia guy. He'd be perfect.
Even people in Philadelphia don't like the Eagles, so that'll be good. I don't know. Do we even want Nerlens Noel? I mean, it's an interesting prospect. I mean, you probably have the best rim-protecting front court in the NBA. That's something.
And one that couldn't score or shoot, right?
Right. So, I mean, it's not like the Heat could score or shoot now.
Well, okay. I mean, but we're seeing that kind of, you know, defensive matchup or backcourt and front court, excuse me, in Orlando, and that's not necessarily helping the Magic either. With Serge Ibaka and Biyombo, and Ibaka's, I think, probably as good a scorer as Whiteside, and one who certainly spaces the floor a lot better. So I'm not sure if you get a guy like Noel, you know, he got a lot of touches when he was healthy, you know, on a team that was particularly bad, and I don't think he's shown that he's a consistent scorer. I don't think you want him. Now, I guess to answer the question, who do you think the Heat could trade for him? I don't even know that we've entertained that kind of notion before. You want to run it through the trade machine and see who's
Waiters
eligible?
Is the only one that makes sense. It's December 15th hit. You could trade his contract. The contracts are close enough. He's a Philly guy. He's a ball creator. He's a shot creator that Philly might say, hey, yeah, we could use that guy. He's still
got the
young
trade kicker, though, right?
I don't even know if they need a trade kicker. From all the rumors right now, it's teams don't even want to touch Nerlens Noel. And he's got some off-court issues, apparently. And between that head case and what we've already got in house. I don't know if that's something that fits, but right, to answer the question, it would probably be Deion Waiters is the guy that makes sense. I don't want anything to do with it. Jack, yes or no? Do you want to trade Deion Waiters for Nerlens Noel?
I would do that hypothetically, but I don't think anything you could realistically package for Noel would be even close to worth it, especially when you have guys, like you said, Hassan on the roster. You have Winslow on the roster. If your future is – I like Winslow and I like Noel, but if your future is Winslow and Noel, you're not going to score any points ever.
Right.
That's the reality. You'll be great on defense, but I don't really know what you win with that. So I like Noel, but I just don't think there's any realistic scenario where you get him for what he's worth, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, especially when you already have a rim protector like Whiteside. It just doesn't really make sense to double down on that. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Hey, Jack, you've got something up coming up on the Miami Heat Beat website about maybe a possible coaching change. That should be up later in the week.
Yeah, it should. Just look for that. I think they should promote from within. That's all I'll say.
All right. And you can follow Jack, of course, at Alfonso Hoops, but you're probably already following him there. Just make sure you are. That's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions just like the ones we just answered, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes and leave us a review. Say nice things about us. Helps other people discover the show. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Got it, Wes.
Yep.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.